idea.
By the way, I have a few more helpful hints. One side will make you grow taller.
One side of what?
And the other side will make you grow shorter.
The other side of what?
The mushroom, of course!
State of game sound check. 1, 2.
Blah, blah.
Alright, welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Hate Me.
And this is Monkey238.
And this is episode 7, or as we like to call it, the one rated PG-13. In this episode, we're going to be revisiting a topic we brought up back in episode 2, the one about naked people. But we'll get to all that in just a minute. So, Monkey, since this one's rated PG-13, I guess we can loosen up a little bit, right?
Yeah, we can say f*** and f***.
Maybe we shouldn't go that far.
What about my
Wow, I didn't know you were a sailor. Okay, just for your sake. Yeah, you're from New York, so we'll let you have that one. Just for your sake, let's pretend that it's now one and rated G so we don't get in trouble with the iTunes rating system. How's that
sure.
Sound? Okay. Anyway, speaking of ratings, let's get down to what we want to talk about today. So back in episode 2, Monkey and I talked a bit about a few pieces of art and games that a lot of people had felt had become controversial. We looked at the almost nude female figures in the Baths and Temple cards in Seven Wonders, and we looked at the half-nude art for mythological figures in the upcoming game Olympus. If you're not familiar with all that, be sure to check out the podcast. It's pretty cool if we do say so.
Word.
Word. So anyway, as it turns out, that podcast struck a chord with a lot of our listeners. And we received several emails and comments on DiceHateMe.com that made us start thinking on the subject of the board game age rating system. Here are a couple of comments that kicked off the long discussion.
Chris Norwood of GamerChris.com said, "Let me start with the nakedness. I don't necessarily feel that any of the images are offensive or anything, but as Tom Gerganis of Go Forth and Game Blog said, they're not really appropriate for children either. According to BGG, the suggested ages for both Seven Wonders and Olympus are 10 and over, which is probably great for the game complexity, but is not really cool for the content of the images. Because I would hate for someone to pick up Olympus because his 10-year-old daughter likes Greek mythology, only to be surprised by Zeus's lightning penis in the middle of play. 13 and 14 and over would be a lot more reasonable to me." Jonathan Liu of Wired.com's Geek Dad chimed in as well. "Finally got around to listening to the podcast, and taking a look at the images you mentioned, I think as an adult, I agree with your points that nudity doesn't necessarily equal sexuality, and vice versa. But as a parent of young children, I also know that distinction only comes with some degree of maturity. A 12-year-old boy, for instance, isn't going to care that the image of the Furies is thematically appropriate or that it's not a sexual image. He's just going to see breasts. I think that what game designers choose to put on their game is up to them, but unless you're specifically trying to make some statement about nudity, why make a 10 and over game that many parents wouldn't allow their kids to play?"
So yeah, we got quite a few comments like these. We also got some emails and Twitter comments that echoed the sentiments. So all of this pretty much brings up a very valid question. Should the board game age rating system be modified? As we all know right now, board games only have one rating on the box, and that really deals with mental acuity. So at what age and above would the game be best enjoyed because of the complexity of rules? In some cases, it also reflects the type of components inside, such as small plastic markers and such, that aren't suitable for young children. But for many games on the market, this is really the only rating that needs to be on the box. So I think Monkey and I can both agree that a game like Pastiche, which has a very family-friendly theme of classic works of art without nudity, really only needs one rating, and that's ages 10 and up. It says so on the box. But other games like Olympus, we feel like maybe they might need two ratings, or at least we want to ask that question of you, the listeners, and amongst ourselves here. Music, video games, and movies have an age-appropriate rating system, so we ask the question, should board games? So what do you think?
I think that it's something that board game designers and or publishers have probably thought about before. I'd be shocked if they hadn't. The fact that there is at least one rating system means that they've established that there is a need for parameters to be set. As far as theme, I don't know. Like I said, I'd be surprised if it hasn't been discussed, but obviously there's been a consensus to not put one on there. I wonder, is this a worldwide thing?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a worldwide thing. I mean, there's a lot of discussion on Board Game Geek and other forums where some Europeans chime in and say that American audiences are a little more sensitive about certain things than they are, and vice versa. I think it could be a worldwide thing. Most of the rating systems, at least that we are familiar with, are American-based or U.S.-based, or at least North American-based. Video game rating systems don't really hold as much weight worldwide as they do in the United States. A lot of that's been pressured from lobbies and Senate and House Representative influence. So board games are a little bit different because board games aren't as prevalent, at least in the media that we're used to now. So it's a tough question to ask. And I guess probably what we'll be talking the most about is an age rating system specifically for U.S. audiences for now, because it would probably be a little bit different for European audiences, at least in my opinion.
Something that just came to mind is if we start reading everything, though, I mean, that then we can lead into the realm of books. And I know right now, literature, we generally have a for kids, I think there's a young adults, and then it just jumps to, you know, nonfiction, fiction, whatever category of books, but we don't have rating systems on books either. So who's right to say that it shouldn't go that far?
Yeah, and that's the slippery slope of rating system in general. Board games are a little bit different and unique in the fact that they're not like video games. Whatever you get in the video game itself is self-contained. You know, you know immediately if it has a mature rating on it, it's going to have either violence or adult themes, language, issues like that. With board games, for the most part, you don't have to deal with a lot of those things because they're a different medium, but you've got to know the complexity of the rule system, but you've got to know the maturity and the theme behind it. Is there anything that may be inappropriate for certain ages? So it's a very different mix, and books probably come closer to that than any other medium, really, because board games a lot of times tell a story, or at least have something that has to do with the written word. It's more of an analog experience than watching a movie or playing a video game. So that's kind of a tough question. The one thing I guess we can talk about is we can bring up some examples, and some people have had some controversies about a few of the games. Board Game Geek is a good place to go for seeing what people think about certain games. But one thing that I had thought about was the theme of violence. We're talking about content and theme. Monkey really hasn't had much experience with the two games that immediately came to mind for me, but the first one is Memoir 44. Now, I've been wanting her to play that for a while, but we really hadn't had a chance. And for those of you who aren't fully familiar with Memoir 44, it's a two-player game based around the invasion of Normandy, started from D-Day on to the liberation of Paris. And it's the U.S. forces versus German forces. And so it's based around World War II. It's a lot of war-based type of thing. There's tanks, little army guys, things like that. This is not an old theme. I mean, as a kid, I played with little army guys, you know, and I was probably six or so. I mean, we didn't think anything about it. Well, on the box for Memoir 44, it says ages 8 and up. A lot of people have said that the inferred violence of war just is not suitable for children under a certain age, say 10 or 12, possibly even 13 and under. Now, that, of course, is something that's left up to interpretation. But it brings that question again, should a war game that may be an age appropriate only 12 and under, should that come with a different label? Because right now, age is 8 and up. And I agree, an 8-year-old could play Memoir 44. The rules are simple enough. It's a very light game as far as understanding the tactical complexities of it. I know you don't know much about that, but you're not going to chime in about that.
I don't think so.
Okay, that's okay. So the other one that I thought about, and it's a little bit more relatable to other games and media that's out there, is Frag by Steve Jackson. And Frag is basically a board game-based version of a first-person shooter like Halo. And Halo itself has a mature rating. As a video game, it's a mature rating. There's a lot of violence, things exploding, guns, gunfire, things like that. Well, Steve Jackson Games has a recommendation for ages 10 and up on the box. For the most part, in my opinion, 10 years and older probably be fine, but it does deal with a lot of those very ultra-violent undertones that a lot of first-person shooters have. The entire game is a parody, and nobody ever really truly dies, and the only real depiction of violence is there's a blood splatter left on the floor after the person gets fragged. But again, they don't die, they just respawn somewhere else and come back out, and it's sort of a virtual atmosphere, so you're not taking it seriously, it's not real people, you're sort of in a video game environment. But again, the violent content is still there. And so is it suitable for ages 12 and over or 13 and over? I mean, this type of if it was a movie, I feel like it probably would be a PG-13 movie. But again, you're not seeing all this. But that's not quite an excuse because it's happening in your mind.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you asked me if I could think of any games about violence, I couldn't really pinpoint one about violence, but what came to mind was Mansions of Madness, and that deals more with horror. And granted, a lot of it is in the storytelling, so when the narration is proceeding, I mean, there's references to death. I mean, the whole game is based on horror checks, which is a really deep psychological issue.
Yeah.
That perhaps if you're younger, you don't realize that it's a psychological issue, so you don't go through the analysis of, you know, is this appropriate for me? But as an adult looking at it, I mean, that's a strange concept to even think of.
Yeah,
you know, and every time you enter a room, you might be horrified. I mean, that's...
Right. It's deep.
That's deep,
It's heady. It's very heady stuff, and that deals with another realm of the psychological portion of games and what would be appropriate theme-wise. Mansions of Madness does have that horror system. Arkham Horror does as well. They're both complex systems, and I doubt that children under the age of, say, 13 would really probably get involved and play the game. But again, it brings up at what age is it appropriate to start, you know, breaching certain subjects or understanding that children can comprehend and process these types of things that are going on. You know, we were a little bit different when we were young, and now kids are exposed to a lot more varied things, and they become much more conditioned to certain things much quicker than we probably did at our age.
Yeah, I guess the only experience I could think of from when I was younger, the games that I played, which might relate to this, are mystery games like Clue and Whodunit. Those are rated 8 and up,
yeah,
according to what we saw on Board Game Geek, and it's all about murder.
Yeah.
Solving a murder mystery. Now, honestly, as a kid, I don't remember thinking, wow, this is really gruesome. And I also can't remember the age when I actually knew what murder was. You know, did I understand that concept when I was playing the game? Of course, I knew what death was. Did I realize that murder was an intentional effort to kill somebody?
Yeah, I don't know that I realized that either. And I do remember the first time I played Clue. I actually got Clue for a birthday when I was 6. I mean, it's rated ages 8 and up, but, you know, I mean, I was a very smart kid, and my parents knew that I loved games, and I remember getting Clue and just playing it and loving it. But did I think anything about the murder behind it? Probably not until I got a little bit older, but at the same time, it's there, and it's present in it. Did that cause me to ask questions about that?
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on from violence and the sort of psychological aspects of that, what I found kind of funny is an instance in Small World, and a lot of people are probably going to laugh at this, but you have to ask yourself, well, surely nobody could take offense at Small World. I mean, it's cartoony. Sure, you're battling out with these mythical races or whatever, fantastical races. There's not really any violence in it. It's a very lighthearted game, but the new standalone expansion, Small World Underground, has some recent teasers that have come out from Days of Wonder, and one of them seems to be promoting drug use. And I'm going to show you the picture of it here, right? Because Monkey has not seen any of this. She's heard me talk about it a little, and she is not really a big fan of Small World, so she doesn't follow a lot of the news of it. But anyway, just bear in mind that Small World's age recommendation from Days of Wonder is 8 and up. So I'm going to show you the picture. Yeah. So I'm going to post this along with the podcast on DiceHateMe.com. But for those of you who have not seen it, it is a race called the Shrooms. They're a giant race of mushrooms, just like it sounds. There's this mushroom sitting here with a giant mushroom cap head. His eyes are replaced with spirals. He seems to be eating shrooms off a plate, and there are little pink elephants dancing around his head. This is definitely portraying that this guy is tripping. I mean, he is tripping out on eating his brethren from the ground right now. So,
yeah, psychedelic, man.
Yeah. And so, anyway, the teaser itself says Silly Sybin, and it's like P-S-Y-B-I-N. So, again, you druggies out there can probably infer what you want to from that sort of teaser. But that begs the question. I mean, ages 8 and up, I mean, a lot of 8-year-olds aren't really going to get that reference. But again, it's in the game. And is that something that we should be a little more wary of in a game that is labeled ages 8 and up? I do agree that an 8-year-old could play Small World. It's not that complicated. It has a lot of lighthearted theme. Seems like something that an 8-year-old would love. But is it fully appropriate for an 8-year-old? I would say that with this image here, probably at least 10 or at least 12 and up. But then again, when I was a kid, I used to watch Mighty Mouse. And Mighty Mouse was a great cartoon. But all of a sudden, there was one episode where Mighty Mouse got lured into this field of flowers. And he came out like all loopy and everything. And so parents got up in arms and saying that it was promoting drug use and kids shouldn't be watching it. And I was outraged because I was like, I didn't get that at all. But then again, I didn't really know what drugs were or was not exposed to that. And I was not asking those questions.
Right, yeah. Perhaps a kid would just look at this shroom man over here and just say, oh, that's a funny man with a mushroom cap head.
Right.
And look how funny his eyes are. And perhaps parents could just laugh along with that and drop it, and it's never touched again. I mean, perhaps, you know how a lot of Pixar films have adult humor interjected,
right,
that clearly children under certain age will not understand, and it's meant for the adult viewers to just get a kick out of. And
yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, Pixar does come to mind, especially in this instance. I don't know that Pixar has ever had an overt reference to drugs in any of their movies.
Oh, I'm not meaning drugs, just
no, but adult
references.
Themes. Yeah, exactly. Mature references that kids will not get, but are really written for adults so that they can enjoy the movie and get that kind of humor too. It invokes that kind of feeling, at least with the artwork and the feeling behind Small World in general. But I bring it up because, again, if we're talking about rating systems and what's appropriate for a certain age, I don't necessarily think that anything that has drug use in it, or at least a subtle reference for drug use, is probably appropriate for an 8-year-old. At least that's me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you want to raise our kids differently. You are a little bit more hippie than I am. I'm not sure. So moving on.
We are not promoting drug use.
No, we do not promote drug use in any way whatsoever. So moving on, what we do promote is sex. I try to rack my brain and think about, well, are there any other subjects that may come up in board games that may seem inappropriate for a certain age? Well, we've been playing a lot of Stone Age lately, and the box says 10 and up. Seems totally appropriate. A 10-year-old can play the game. It's very innocuous as far as the theme. It's a very richly themed game. It's a fun game. It's very approachable by a lot of different people. But then again, there's one spot on the board where you have to place two of your meeples, and it's next to a hut. And they go inside the hut. And when they're done, you get another meeple in your tribe. I mean, it's pretty obvious that they're making babies in there. So this is kind of a humorous example. But again, it's like if you're I don't remember. Do you remember when you knew what sex was?
Actually, I think when I was 10, I got a book as a party favor. That cartoony book, Where Did I Come From?
Oh, I've not seen that, but I've heard of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I might still have it if you need to reference it.
Yeah, maybe I need to read it later. I hope I don't need to read it later.
So I think that's possibly the first time I really knew what sex was. But that was also in the efforts of explaining sex as procreation.
Right, reproduction, right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I guess the question arises, let's say in Stone Age, that mechanism of putting two people into a hut and all of a sudden three come out could provoke the question from a kid, how is that possible?
Yeah, and a lot of kids might just simply think like it's just like where a lot of the people live and they need more help. So they go in and grab another person and they say, come out and help us. You know, I mean, it's not an overt thing. And again, this is something just as a point for discussion. It's more humorous than anything. But again, it could beg the question.
Well, and then as a parent, how would you choose to explain it? Just as you said, or would you go into the deeper explanation?
And perhaps you would. And this is one of those borderline ones where I think that probably 10 and up is totally fine. I mean, I don't remember when I knew fully what sex was or started asking those questions. Probably like anywhere from 10 to 12 was around the age. Some kids may learn younger nowadays. I just don't know. But again, that raises that issue. Well, if there is a little bit of a mature theme, maybe we don't need specifically a rating system. Maybe we just need to have a description of content on the box, you know, or like something that if you're going to choose to play this with your children, that adults should know about. I don't know. This is just something that we're bringing up because obviously it raises a red flag for some people, and it has been an issue. So again, judging from all the ones that we've brought up as far as borderline issues, we also have a couple, or at least that I've found a couple, of where some companies have taken into account the terms of contents and theme when they gauge the age ratings on the box. Now, the one that I found that was pretty appropriate was Roadkill Rally. Now, some people may think that it was supposed to have a mature rating. I think that a 13 and up rating would be appropriate for this game. I played it yesterday. I've been wanting to play it forever. But for those who don't know, Roadkill Rally is pretty much, as they describe it, Car Wars meets Death Race 2000. You've got weapons on your cars and you're racing and you're trying to basically run over pedestrians and shoot each other in these cars. I mean, it's not a very safe theme. It's fun and it's done a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's not meant to be taken very seriously. But again, some people could take it very seriously, and I would think that if it was a movie, it would skirt the issue between PG-13 and rated R. Now, on the box, clearly, it says 13+, and Z-Man Games has made it clear that it is a 13 and over game. I think that is very wise on their part to market it that way. Whether it's also marketed that way because of guidelines that have to deal with plastic components that comes in boxes, you have to have certain games tested in order to be rated ages 12 and under. But I don't think so. I think in this case, probably the content had a lot to do with how they marketed that. And I do believe that this game could be playable rules-wise by a 10-year-old, probably. You know, at least 10 or 12. But by putting 13+ on the box, it seemed responsible to me as far as content-wise. Now, Monkey didn't play the game with me yesterday. She didn't show up, and we're going to talk about this in just a minute. She didn't show up to the games party we had early enough, but I had a blast with the game. We're going to talk about it in just a little bit. But another game that I'm going to show Monkey a couple pieces of art from, Wolffang put out a game, and I'm not sure exactly when it was released, but this game called Seven, and it says specifically for this is ages 15 and up. Now, that's pretty rare for a game to come out and say that it's recommended for ages 15 and up. I don't necessarily think that the mechanics in it's probably going to be ages 15 and up, but it seems like the theme and the content within the box is what deals with it, because it's a fantasy-based game, deals with heroics and corruption, incorporates the seven deadly sins into the game. It's really dark, but it's pretty much the art. That's what makes the game seem like it's not only suitable for ages 15 and up, but it's also perfectly modeled for 15-year-olds. So I'm going to show a couple pieces of art to Monkey here and see what she thinks about that. Here are the sin cards. Yeah, I'm going to post this along with the podcast at DiceHateMe.com, but for anyone out there who wants to imagine, there are seven cards, of course, all relating to the seven deadly sins, and they're all very, very scantily clad women in alluring poses.
What's the eighth one?
Oh, this is the back of the card art.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, Chris here said this is very much geared for 15-year-olds. I am going to rephrase that and say this is geared for 15-year-old boys.
Yes, 15-year-old boys. Yeah, I don't necessarily think too many 15-year-old girls would be into this sort of game. But yeah, it has that sort of mentality. I mean, you know, the photo and the art and the thing, it seems like it's got some high production values, kind of well done, but it's definitely skirting the edge on being soft core here.
I was going to say, they look like Playboy.
Yeah, absolutely. Photos. Yeah, especially Lust here on the far right. I think that's Lust. I don't know. Didn't study the game very long. But anyway, there are a couple other pieces of art. Two of them are female warriors that come with the game. And here's one of them.
She's got some quads.
Yeah, she does. She kind of looks like she's got your legs.
My legs are not that big, by the way.
No, they're not that big, but they're that muscular. I'll post this picture as well, but she looks like a female Conan the Barbarian or Red Sonja. She's got a great big one-handed sword and great big globes. I don't know. Anyway, she's popping out of these vest and skin or whatever she's got on. But anyway, very scantily clad. Not that shocking, I guess, in the realm of fantasy art. you know, the Frank Frazetta style and heavy metal, things like that. But again, this is late teen years appropriate, probably. I mean, some comic books may get this graphic. But again, it shows that there is some appropriateness. I'm going to show one more piece to Monkey just because I want her to see this because it's actually humorous. I'm going to post this one as well. For everyone who sees this picture on DiceHateMe.com, you'll know which one I'm talking about because it is the female warrior with the nipple rings and the badonkadonk. If you were a female warrior, Monkey, would you stand like this?
No, probably not.
No, probably not. Yeah, I don't think so.
And I'd probably cover my buttocks.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to get them chopped off in the middle of a battle. But yeah, she's got quite the outfit on. This is clearly someone who was painting based on a photo. Had someone standing there, a model standing there. It's very provocatively posed. It's not.
She's carrying a big old sword too.
She does have a very, very large sword. And yeah, it's very impressive. I'm wondering how they got, you know, her upper armor here shaped exactly like her breast. It's very impressive. Anyway, so we digress. I feel like even though this art obviously is gratuitous, it's meant to sell because of the sex factor of it, but at least that the one thing that's important to note on this is that Wolf Fang basically labeled this 15 and up. Thought it was very appropriate. Very well done. Thank you. But it goes back and talks about how you can be appropriate in trying to target what your audience is. Now, I know a lot of game companies want to go and try to make it as accessible as possible to a lot of different people. They want to make it very family-friendly. That's great. But at the same time, it needs to be followed by, at least in my mind, a little bit of a responsibility to their content. Not necessarily that we need a rating system, but if there's something in there that needs to be addressed or something that's labeled for an adult who's going to buy this to play with their family, they should probably be warned about it or know about it at least. Do you have anything else to add?
Nope, but maybe our listeners do.
Yeah?
Yeah, so what do you all think? Should board games have a maturity rating like video games? Leave us a comment on DiceHateMe.com or send us an email at podcast@DiceHateMe.com.
Well said, Monkey.
Thank you.
So, enough of that seriousness. Let's get on to the meat of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. The state of games. So, Monkey and I have been playing a lot of games lately. No shock there. We've mentioned that a lot before. But we've been playing Fresco, Pastiche, Stone Age, Train of Thought with some wagers, Wasabi. I mean, tons of stuff, right?
Yeah, since this has all been since the last podcast.
Yeah, about so. 2 weeks. Yeah. Well, we'd mentioned on one of the previous podcasts that we went to a kind of a Festivus for the rest of us, or the gamer and the rest of us, over at Tom Gerganis' house. It's Gameathon Apocalypse Festicon. This is number 3. So we went this weekend and had a chance to play some really cool games there. Monkey had some work to do.
Boo.
Yeah, boo. So I headed over there first, and I got a chance to sit down and play Chronicle, which was a really neat trick-taking game from Z-Man Games. I recommend everybody check it out. Unfortunately, it's only a game suitable for 3 to 6 players. The 2 players version can't really work, so it might limit how much Monkey and I get to play it. But it was really fun, especially for a trick-taking game. The art was cool. The quality of the cards seemed cool. I also got to play Ascension, Chronicle of the Godslayer. Some of you may be familiar with that, but it's a deck-building game that I really liked and had more fun with than Dominion. And a lot of you are probably going to think that's sacrilege, but I did. And finally, as I mentioned before, I got to play Roadkill Rally, which I've been wanting to play forever. Since I'm an old-school Car Wars junkie, a lot of the rules and gameplay are similar, and so it was instantly familiar. I jumped right into it, absolutely loved it, going to buy it, going to convert Monkey into an auto-duelist, whether she likes it or not.
Oh.
Oh. How do you feel about that?
Oh.
Oh. Now that means we'll see, I guess.
Yeah. So anyways, I finally got to show up around 5:30 or 6 for pizza and games. So that was pretty cool. And the first one that I got to play was Pastiche. The first time Chris and I played it, it was just the two of us. And we got to play it with our friend Sean this weekend, which definitely elevated the gameplay level. I liked the game to begin with, even with 2 players. I liked the theme. I love the artwork. I love the the concept and the play, but it felt like multiplayer solitaire, which is fine and dandy, but Chris and I like to play because it's the time that we get to step away from work and enjoy each other and interact with each other, and we felt like that was a bit lacking. But once we had a third player, there was much more of that competitive edge as far as urgency is concerned.
Right.
And that was a really nice element. Plus, we had a really good gaming partner. So
yeah, and we got to actually trade a bit. I mean, there's only a couple of trades made during the game, but it was nice to be able to have that option of, you know, just like in Settlers, when you're like, I need wood for sheep, you know? I mean, you can say, I need green for amber or whatever. And we were able to do those sort of trades and jockey for position on the board with the little hexes that you have to mix and match paints with. So overall, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I think it's a really, really cool game, but I'd like to play it a couple more times two-player with us before I make up my full mind about it, but I would recommend it for 3+.
Yeah, I think we should try and maybe come up with a house rule to see if we can recreate a little bit of that urgency.
Yeah, we're going to play around with a couple ideas we were talking about last night, and we'll let you all know how it goes.
Let's see. What else did we play? We played Survive again with Sean, and that was probably my favorite game of the evening, even though I only played 3, but it was awesome.
It was so awesome.
The sea creatures.
The sepals. Yeah.
They're really cute.
Yeah, and most of you probably have heard of Survive, but if you hadn't, it's a reprint of a game from the early 80s called Survive, naturally. Survive, Escape from Atlantis. It's redone by Stronghold Games, and it basically, you have a bunch of these little meeples that you are stuck on an island, and the island's slowly sinking, and you got to try to get them to the 4 islands on the corners of the board, and you can put them on boats, they can swim, but you're not alone.
Yeah, because there's the dolphins, which are your friends, and they'll help you out if you're swimming, but then there's whales, which will ruin your boat, and then there's sharks, which will just eat you, and then the severely dreaded sea monster, which will just take you and your boat down and gobble you up.
Yeah, and it's a very cutthroat game.
But fun,
yeah. This game, even though it's full of punk factor and spite and everything else, I mean, there's just, even when somebody does something to you, you know it's not going to be too long until you're able to do the same thing to them or do mm-hmm. something else to them. So you don't take it very seriously. The components and just the theme and the feel of the game is very lighthearted, but just edge of your seat fun. It is a great time. And it's suitable for 2 to 4 players. We got lucky this time we were playing with 3, but I think that we'd still have a great time playing it 2 players. So we're definitely going to go and buy it as soon as we can and would highly recommend it. The components are fantastic. The quality of it is fantastic. It was the highlight of the evening.
I imagine it would appeal to a wide audience as well.
Absolutely.
From kids to grandparents.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Anybody that you feel safe
eating.
Toss into a sea monster. Yeah, exactly.
The finale of the evening was Railways of the World, which we did not actually have enough time to finish. And then in hindsight, we have also realized that we made some mistakes in the rules, which is to be expected with a lengthy game like this.
And this was the first time that any of us had ever played
it. 4 of us.
Right. It was me and Monkey and Sean. This game was provided to him by Griffin Games, Eagle and Griffin Games. And Michael Harrison, Oldby, on Twitter, and also from Wired.com's Geek Dad.
So we had a lot of fun. I personally like the theme, and I know Chris does.
Loved it, yeah.
Michael, we found out, is not a huge fan of train theme games, so
he was mostly humoring us, but he had a good time, I think.
Yeah.
He was having a good time.
Basically, you're building tracks between different cities and trying to carry your goods from city to city.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's ever played any sort of train games before, even on the computer, this particular build is based around the old game Railroad Tycoon, and which became the video game. But again, just building railroads, carrying goods, trying to make as much money as you can. You take a little bit of debt in the beginning, then you're trying to build this vast empire. It is a lengthy game. It has a ton of components, huge box. And a huge map. I mean, we were lucky we didn't have the biggest table in the house when we were playing it. We would not have been able to play it. I mean, you can ride this board. You can use it as a surfboard. It's that big. But, I mean, I thought it was great. I think I had the most fun out of everybody, but that's simply because I really like train games.
I had fun, too.
Yeah, well, I bet you had fun. You won.
Yeah.
Matter of fact,
the wrong rules.
But still, I mean, it worked out just fine. She actually won every game she played last night, not surprisingly. Yeah, that's usually the case.
I was going to say, speaking of Railways of the World, didn't you have something to say about you and Eagle and Griffin Games?
Yeah. So Dice Hate Me has been lucky enough to partner with Eagle and Griffin Games to bring you a really sweet deal. So listen up. If you order anything now from EagleGames.net and you mention Dice Hate Me in the comments section of the order, you'll get 20% off your entire purchase. And shipping is free on any orders over $30 on EagleGames.net. And you can't beat that with a stick. So you can get great games like we just mentioned, Railways of the World, Pastiche is from them, Roll Through the Ages, which we love, Through the Ages, and Defenders of the Realm, amongst other cool games like Ink and Gold and Money. So go to EagleGames.net right now, get 20% off your order. Awesome.
Very awesome.
So, hey, Monkey, did you know that Dice Hate Me is going to be celebrating its anniversary on June 1st?
What?
Yes. It's been a whole year.
Wow.
I know. Time flies.
It's been a journey.
It has been a journey. Well, we need your help to decide how to celebrate. So, let's just say we've got something really, really special to give away to one dear reader or listener. And let me tell you, it is special. So, we're not ready to announce exactly what it is just yet, but it's really cool and really free. At any rate, we'd like to make this giveaway contest something special, so listen up and put on your thinking caps.
I mean, should we have a scavenger hunt, or perhaps a multi-part podcast-only puzzle, or maybe the secret word is... Send your suggestions to podcast@dicehateme.com, and who knows, we may decide to give our prize away to people who just email us.
Yeah.
Or whatever. No. Email us anyways.
Hey, did you know you can find us on Twitter? Seriously, and we're actually pretty cool.
Yep.
You can follow me at Dice Hate Me.
And find me at Monkey238. And I am over 13, so we can talk about anything you want.
And don't forget to check out DiceHateMe.com, because if you don't, we're likely to be bought out by Google. Until next time, this is Dice Hate Me.
And Monkey238.
Saying thanks for listening. And may all your rolls be sixes.